We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast for a brief warning for tonight's episode. Content warnings for discussions of violence committed against children, violence committed by children, misogyny, and sexual assault. Proceed with caution. Welcome to Gimcrack Video. How may I help you?
Hey, what's going on, man? You got anything new to watch?
No, but we are running a special on sequels.
Is that over there on that shelf that says that it's not for human consumption?
No, there's one right next to it that says $3 for $1.
Oh, let's just grab some. What could go wrong?
Enjoy your selection.
So I was staying at this hotel on this business trip, and it's the best hotel in the city. I'm staying there. It's about 7:30 at night. I've got my Texas Roadhouse to go in the hotel room because Roadhouse is the only place you can eat anywhere in Arkansas for some reason. You know, you can eat at Texas Roadhouse or Logan's Roadhouse in most parts of Arkansas. You get the two choices, not much beyond that. And so I'm eating, and all of a sudden, the television goes out.
Oh.
And the internet goes out.
All right.
And then the power goes out.
Oh, shit. In the hotel?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, and this is the hotel I was telling you where one of the elevators was out of order and the other elevator was making a sound like it was grinding to a halt the whole time.
Yeah.
And shaking. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sitting there like, we live in a vertical world. Mm. So I'm already up. A couple of levels. I have to ride the hell elevator down, but you can't because there's no power. And also, I don't want to leave the room because I can't get back in the room if the door shuts, right? The electronic locks.
Oh, yeah.
What do you do? So I'm just sitting there in the dark in Arkansas in this haunted-ass hotel. Now, I don't have proof that it's haunted. I just assume that any hotel in Arkansas is haunted.
It's gotta be.
And it's gotta be, right? But like after 10 minutes, everything comes back on. I'm like, okay, fine. No big deal. Slight misadventure.
Yeah.
But about an hour later, the whole thing goes down again.
Oh, Jesus.
And then about 20 minutes later, it comes back. I'm like, okay. And then about an hour later, guess what the fuck happens again?
Everything goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
And all night like that.
Oh, that's fun.
So I get up the next morning. I'm like, hey, guys, what the fuck was up last night? It's like, I don't know. They're just renovating. Yeah, they're renovating parts of the hotel at night and cutting off all the power. Cool. What accommodations are you going to get?
Right.
You hear that?
A voucher for Roadhouse. For a free appetizer at the Roadhouse.
Right, but it's for Logan's Roadhouse and not Texas Roadhouse, and I need my damn cinnamon
well,
butter.
Well, and I get to fly out Saturday morning when it's supposed to be snowing and crazy and like, okay, this will be fun. So this may be my last episode.
I hate to tell you, but we won't be searching for a replacement. The show will come as to a sudden and abrupt end.
So if there's no more episodes after this, you know why. We got pieces that we can always throw up, and what was the one with the weightlifting dudes? You got that one. You can recycle those.
Yeah, sure. I still have those files.
I do, oddly enough. All right. Well, let's see. I've got myself a Voodoo Ranger Fruit Force here, so that's fun.
Cool, I'm drinking water.
Yeah, I got one of those too. They did, however, switch my flight from a 737 MAX 9 to a 737-900, which is apparently an older model where the doors don't fly off. So that's good.
Yeah, points for that.
Yeah, I don't ask for much. I just would like my plane to stay together while I'm flying somewhere. That's all.
No, that seems reasonable. Yeah. That seems like a reasonable request. I don't know. He's just splicing Michael Moriarty screaming, run! Run!
I'm going to...
Run! Which should have been the tagline for this fucking movie. All right, start the
Welcome
show.
Welcome to the Found on Shelf podcast, a podcast that is 100% officially against the murder of monster babies.
Speak for your fucking self.
Well, we love to unearth often overlooked cinematic treasures. but we usually end up finding cinematic trash. And sometimes you just got to go digging and see what you can find. And you know what they say? You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And joining me today to help throw the babies is my co-host, Patrick. Oh, my goodness. We are off to a start with this episode. Well,
to a start.
Well, I'm gonna get this started with the kids call it a call to action. I guess we're supposed to start our podcast with something like that.
No, you don't do that like the first 5 minutes of the podcast.
You don't? Are you supposed to talk first and then do?
It's bad for organic growth, man. You gotta throw the calls to action at the end of the show.
No, I do them both. I bookend them.
No one's going to listen to both.
Yes, but they'll listen to one or the other. They either skip the first 30 seconds or they don't listen to the end. Listen to both.
All right. But it's not for more voicemails. I have a bad feeling about the voicemails.
I'm hoping. Well, I wrote down. The call to action. So I'm going to do it anyway. I'm just going to do it.
I trip you up.
And you know what sucks is you edit it. So you could always oh wait, I made a typo. Our website's not found on shelf poo. Oh man.
That's right. It's found on shitpod.
Found on shitpod.com. here's the call to action. Share this with a friend. Go check out our website, which is not found on shitpod. It is found on shelfpod.com. And we're supposed to ask you guys for subscriptions and ratings. And like Patrick said, you can leave a voicemail and we may play your voicemail on a future episode.
It might get removed in post.
It might, but we might play it. Download every podcast playing app that you can on your phone and listen to this episode on each one. You can prank call your neighbors with sound clips from the episode. You know, if you get somebody like a telemarketer tries to call you, tell you that your car warranty is about to expire, just tell them to listen to us. You know, if you
okay, but seriously, your warranty is about to expire. I've been trying to reach you. You need to contact me.
You need to listen to the Found on Shelf podcast. That's all you got to do. It's that easy, people. If you reach the end of existence and the childlike empress asks you to give her a name.
Moon Child!
No, tell her it should be the Found on Shelf podcast. Or don't do any of that. I don't care. Just sit back, listen, and enjoy.
I randomly scream Moon Child when I think it's funny. And so far, no one else has laughed. So but either not enough people are watching the NeverEnding Story or the joke isn't funny. And that just doesn't track. So it's got to be the first one, right?
You know what? A lot of people don't know that's what is said at the end. A lot of people are not aware of what the end of that movie is really about. They also don't understand why it's called the NeverEnding Story and that it repeats itself. But whatever.
Or the movie is only like half of the book.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. You know what? There is NeverEnding Story Part 3.
Jack Black.
Oh, that's right. Oof. Oh, yeah. So you don't really have to do any of that stuff, I said. You can if you'd like to. That'd be nice. But, you know, we're not here to tell you what to do. But I am here to tell Patrick what to do. And Patrick has to watch certain movies, right? So today we are continuing our journey into the Threeniverse. We call it the Threeniverse.
No. No, because you've pitched Puniverse, you've pitched Threeniverse, you've pitched Shelfiverse. I think you said something about just being adverse. I am universe adverse, and we need to stop with the, what's the word?
Verse? What about three-semina, cinema? Three-cinema? No. Three-quil? No. I don't know. It'll come to me anyway. Anyway,
aren't we beyond definitions at this point?
We are beyond a lot of things at this point. Definitely beyond the point of no return. Because we are talking about our threequel season here, talking about part three movies only. 1987's It's Alive 3, Island of the Alive.
Yeah. So I have a question for you before we get started.
Yes.
So, if someone had pitched a movie to you called It's Alive 3, Island of the Alive, would you then assume that parts of the movie in fact took place on an island and that would be greater than 15 to 20 minutes?
In fact, I would assume that the majority of the movie would be in an island. In fact, I would think that there would be more scenes on the island than there were in a courtroom, but I would be wrong. I think.
You would be dead wrong.
Yeah. So this movie is part of the It's Alive trilogy, the baby monster movies. Yeah, they decide to, the director, writer, we'll talk about him too, because I know Patrick's got some things to say about him.
We're gonna start talking about that right in the get-go. If you think we're gonna separate making of and discussion into separate portions.
That was already my first chunk here to kind of talk about him. But
okay, go ahead.
He kind of goes with the more personal and wants to go with more of an everyday man in an insane kind of situation. So instead of
he wants to do white dude feelings movies. Every movie is white dude feelings movies. This particular one is a white male rage movie. So if any of you are concerned that I might sound like a little pretentious, if you're thinking that I'm going to get a little bit heady with this one, it's coming.
Yeah.
I can't stop myself. Holy God, watch this movie, Dustin.
Well, okay, so before we get into it,
I came to watch a movie with killer babies tear people to shreds on an island. That's what was on the tin. I wanted that so bad.
It did happen.
But
maybe 8 minutes of the movie. That's about it. But it did happen. Now, Patrick, before we get, would you want to do an elevator pitch, or I'm giving you options here, or would you like me to do a brief summary of the two movies that led us to where we are, of the first two movies?
You could do the summary after my pitch. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to pitch this movie. I'm going to pitch every Larry Cohen movie.
Oh God.
Are you ready? We're going to go down the list. Okay, so the movie It's Alive 3 is supposed to be about an island of demon monster babies killing people. And that it is, but how would you like to see that movie through the lens of a middle-aged man? Now, I know what you're thinking. That sounds a little strange, but he's got other movies. So how about a movie called God Told Me To, in which a cop has to investigate a series of unrelated violent incidents in which the subjects all tell them that God told them to do it. And we find out that at the end, aliens are behind it. And in fact, there's a messianic Jesus figure who is intersex and wants to have the cop, who is his brother's baby.
Yeah, see, that movie actually sounds good, though.
But what about if we did that movie through the lens of a middle-aged man?
Yeah, no.
Now, you lost me there. Okay, all right. How about Cue the Winged Serpent? This movie has got it all. It's got a giant dinosaur that may or may not be the god Quetzalcoatl terrorizing New York and murdering people from the sky. It also has David Carradine and Roundtree as cops investigating these violent murders. Now, how would you like to see that movie?
That sounds good.
Through the lens of a middle-aged man.
So you lost me again.
Okay. I see there's some pushback. Okay, Maniac Cop.
Yes.
How about a movie in which a corrupt police officer is murdered and comes back as an evil, murdering zombie cop?
Hell yeah.
Would you like to see that movie through the lens of a middle-aged man?
Stop right there. Would you like to see that movie? And just stop right there.
But through the lens of a middle-aged man.
I don't want to see anything through the lens of a middle-aged man. I see my own life out of the eyes of a middle-aged man.
That's my overall interpretation of Larry Cohen movies. Would you disagree from that?
What about the Stuff?
Honestly, I think that one is an outlier because while it does have Michael Moriarty, and he is a middle-aged white guy, the movie is more or less actually a film noir / action movie.
Yeah,
from my remembering, because and God Told Me To. What we mostly get is this man's issues with his mother, his lover, and his estranged wife. What we mostly get in Maniac Cop is Bruce Campbell feeling trapped in his marriage. What we mostly get in this movie, we'll get to this one in a minute.
Yeah.
And then, but like the Stuff, I feel like it had mostly aliens. Now I still have to put up with Michael Moriarty, and I just really do not like Michael Moriarty. But the movie is mostly okay. Like I wouldn't sign up to watch the Stuff, but it's not. It's not the same thing. Oh, Cue the Winged Serpent is Michael Moriarty with an inferiority complex. Oh, okay. That was the other one that we talked about. Yeah. But no, like, why the fuck does he keep showing up?
Well, because he liked working with him.
It's because Larry Cohen shouts on set and Michael must have just been okay with that.
Yeah, we'll get to Michael when we get there. But yeah, you kind of hit on a lot of the notes that I wrote down here about Larry Cohen himself. He was kind of quoted as saying he likes to put like normal people like a cop or a lawyer or a, you know, just a doctor, just some random person. Mm-hmm. Into these bizarre sci-fi situations. But then he really, like you said, he focuses on that person. Mm-hmm. Going through this situation, which is interesting in concept. It just doesn't always work to like a you know, to watch as a movie.
Right. It's a Stephen King problem. It's Larry Cohen is writing probably, and don't get me, this is a guess, right? But if I were to guess, I would say he's writing more from his perspective of that character. And that tends to be a very basic experience or imaginary of experiences over and over again. And that doesn't translate to any kind of like interesting territory because there's no diversity to that kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
And I like diversity with a capital D, but like I would like to see something interesting in the story. So if it could be anything other than this limited imaginary, this limited slice of the pie, I think we might see something cool. But we don't get that. We get the same basic vibes over and over again. A lot of marriage trouble, which is, again, you know, Stephen King kills his wife a lot.
Yeah.
So in stories, yeah. You know, the characters always do that, which is different.
You know, because they say you write what you know.
So what's the summary of these two, of the lead up to It's Alive?
What about Uncle Sam? I have not actually watched Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam is not through the lens of a middle-aged man, but it is very, very bad.
Yeah.
It is very, very bad. It is very, very, very bad.
Yeah. Well, he also wrote the film Phone Booth.
I didn't see Phone Booth. No,
but you remember what Michael Bay said about Phone Booth.
What did Michael Bay say about Phone Booth?
They approached Michael Bay about doing this movie, The Phone Booth. And
Michael Bay... Is it not enough explosions?
No, Michael Bay said, okay, how do we get it out of the damn phone booth? That was his first reaction to it, which was the entire pitch of the movie in the first place. So
it's a bottle movie. Yeah.
He actually pitched this movie to Alfred Hitchcock in the 1960s.
Phone Booth?
Yeah. And he had...
Is this before or after he made Bone?
I think it was after he made Bone. But he... Because he had an idea of a movie to take place in real time and stuck in a phone booth. And neither him nor Alfred Hitchcock could come up with an idea as to why he needs to be stuck in a phone booth. Like, they love this idea, but they couldn't write why. And then
is it a sniper in the
yeah
end?
And then in the late 90s Cohen came up with the idea of a sniper because times have changed.
Well, didn't Boris Karloff, isn't his last movie Targets about a sniper? Or Roger Corman had him for a couple of days and they make this terrible movie about a sniper? Like the idea is not there. And then also Malcolm McDowell, he's in the movie If, which is about a kid going up on the top of a tower with a gun.
Yeah.
So it's not like that idea wasn't out there. They had just not encountered it, which is an interesting thought.
Or they had just not thought of it as being the reason the guy's stuck in the phone booth. I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, after this, definitely there's a rise in gun violence afterwards. So, yeah. Like, you could see it being more prominent as a thought.
Okay. So I can do. Oh, and there was also a remake of It's Alive, the first movie. It was remade in 2009, had terrible reviews. And Cohen even said it was a dreadful, terrible picture and just beyond awful.
Is that like Hellraiser? Was it 7 or 8? When it's like from the mind of Clive Barker, and Clive says, "This isn't even from my asshole."
Yeah, basically.
Hi, it's Gimcrack here, and I want to talk about a serious issue today: mental health. Sometimes we all find ourselves struggling. Maybe you need someone to talk to. Maybe you just can't cope with banishing your monster baby to an uninhabited island. Whatever the issue, there's a way to get help now with Better Than Nothing. That's right. Better Than Nothing is a state-of-the-art app to help pair you with a licensed psychologist or a guy named Frank working out of a studio apartment in Queens easily and without stress. Get counseling, medications, and help with all of your issues from a service that is in no way a data collection scheme selling your personal information. So if you find yourself blaming women because you work in a shoe store, or contemplating helping a race of mutants conquer humanity, seek help with Better Than Nothing. There's no way it blows up in a huge scandal for shady business practices or anything. When you need help, it's Better Than Nothing.
So I can give you a very brief rundown of the first two movies, and then we could play the trailer, and then we can really dig down into this movie.
Sure.
So the first two were much more interesting. Apparently, I watched the first one. I did not get a chance to watch all of the second one, but I looked up summaries. So basically, in the first one, we see dude giving birth to a monster baby. It turns out they very briefly mentioned that she was taking contraceptive pills, and they just kind of hint that that was the cause of the mutant killer babies, but they don't really go into it.
I thought this was like Monsanto.
Something
like poisoning the supply. That would have been cool. Like, oh, we just ate fruit that was poisoned with these pesticides. It was strictly the pill kills.
It was like, yeah, and it leads him to do certain things.
Yeah, okay, but like you could see how that's worse, mm-hmm. right? What? Because this is an extremely misogynistic film. like the dangers of the pill, like. Is okay. I know Larry Cohen's not Catholic, but the idea sounds way more.
He's definitely not Catholic. Yeah.
No, obviously. But like, it's way more conservative than just like, well, the evil company was putting this into the water supply. Yeah. Or like, this was in Tylenol or something, you know, but it's like the pill. I don't know. That's worse.
In fact, when he wrote God Told Me To, he wrote that because he said he was reading the Bible and he thought that God in the Bible was one of the most violent characters in all of literature. And so he wanted to write God Told Me To.
And also, I think he was probably reading Chariots of the Gods.
It could have been. I don't know. Who knows? So that was kind of the basic. Have
you read, sidebar. No, you know Chariots of the Gods, right?
A little bit, yeah. Not much, okay. But a little bit.
Oh, you should have. You have to read and watch that because we've got to discuss.
Oh boy! All right.
Like, don't get me wrong. I don't believe it, but it is fundamental to some of the movies we should be talking about.
Yeah, I will add that to my list, and I will try to examine that on the flight. Oddly. So anyway, back to It's Alive one. So the contraceptive pills that she's taking. But like I said, they kind of briefly mention it, but then the pharmaceutical company shows up that made it, and the pharmaceutical company wants to kill the baby so they can hide their liability. And a bunch of stuff happens. Baby escapes from the hospital, kills a bunch of doctors, and runs around. And then Frank, the dad, Frank ends up shooting the baby, but doesn't kill it, and then discovers that it's scared. And he's like, I'm going to rescue this baby. And he's surrounded by a bunch of cops at the end of the movie. Fertility doctor yells, kill it. The baby leaps out of his hands and the cops shoot the doctor and the baby.
So is he Frank because it's like a Frankenstein thing? Like my son is my monster?
Yes. I don't know if that's why the name was Frank, but the Frankenstein was mentioned as a sort of inspiration to this. Okay. Part two actually seems like the strongest one of the series, which happens sometimes.
And that's in 78.
That was in 78, yeah. And it was.
That's like 9 years before this movie, because this is 87, right?
Yeah. The only reason this movie was made is because he made a deal to make this and Return to Salem's Lot. That was his kind of. Okay. Hey, if you want me to do some films, I want these two films. And they said, it's kind of, part two starts off with Frank at the beginning. And I watched, like I said, like the first 20 minutes or so of it. And he just shows up at some baby shower, just like some random people's baby shower. And everybody else, all the other guests leave except for him just sitting on the couch. And the husband and wife are sitting there looking at each other like, do you know him? And I don't know him. Do you know him? And then they go talk to him. And he's just like, man, he's basically like, your baby is going to be like my baby was. He's going around telling all these people that they're going to have monster babies and everyone's trying to kill him, but we can try to save them and whatever. So he's trying to like save all these monster babies because they have some weird psychic connection with them now.
So scanners.
Yeah.
It's scanners.
Scanner babies. That's what we need. Scanner babies.
Okay. But like... But like there is a whole drug makes scanners into scanners like side plot.
So scanners ripped off It's Alive.
It does come after.
That's what you're going on record as saying. All right.
No, yep, I'm not yep. doing
and,
that.
And yeah, it's basically kind of the same thing. Except for now there's three babies in this movie. And, you know, they're under observation. They escape. They kill a bunch of people. They kill Frank. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the movie, the dad that Frank was originally talking to, who survived by killing his own monster baby, is now warning other parents about their potential monster babies. So there you go. One of the things that's not explained well, many of the things that are not explained well, the pharmaceutical companies that are causing these mutations, they barely mention it. It's hinted that the monster babies are nature's answers to living in a polluted world. That's not really gone into too much as to how.
So this is like, a deleted episode of Captain Planet.
Yeah. Yeah. Captain Planet, Monster Island babies. And then there's some telepathy only between the parents and the monsters, or the parents and the babies. Shouldn't call them monsters because they have feelings too. So yeah. So that catches us up to where we are. And then you said there's, you know, a few years in between this one. The only cast that's the same is one of the cops, Lieutenant something or other. I'll get to his name here later. He's the only one that's really in all three of them. But yeah, they do mention Frank Davis a couple times in this movie. You probably would not even recognize if you didn't hear it. But yeah, let's just play the trailer.
Remember the babies? They found a place to put them. Now they're growing up. And they want to come home. And they're hungry. It's Alive Part 3, Island of the Alive. Don't see it alone.
Yes, don't see it alone because we need ticket sales. That was a really short, sweet trailer. I appreciate the trailer.
Yeah, I think the first one is actually pretty short too, because it's like they're expecting a baby or something. The problem is it's alive, but like it's like from the pram.
Yeah,
it's like you see the baby buggy.
And that's what this one was too visually.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about this fucking movie.
So let's talk about the you know what, the movie did start off with a great cold opening. I think it was the opening of it was pretty awesome.
The movie starts out with a static shot off a Dutch angle, which is a weird of like this building, which is kind of weird. But then it does eventually pan down. It's in the rain. It's kind of cool. The cold open I'll give is pretty good because it gets you the idea of like this is a movie. This is production values. It's dark. It's a stormy night. There's a monster. It's cool.
Yeah.
I liked it. Immediately goes to a cop investigating the next day, the fallout of the crime. So what happens is just like a baby gets delivered in the back of the car. It's a monster demon baby. Kills the cop. Kills the taxi driver, goes into a church. Yep. It has some implied religious imagery.
Yeah,
that I think is a joke.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, they're like, why did he need to come here? But yeah, this opening scene apparently with the baby in the cab and the cop yelling, "Oh shit, it's one of them!" and starts shooting the woman and monster baby. Apparently, that scene was used as a scene in Clint Eastwood's The Deadpool. I have not seen that movie. So I really should see it because it's got like Jim Carrey in a weird serious role, but
right. So like the whole thing was used in the Deadpool. Like what was used in the Deadpool?
Just this opening scene. I guess there's a scene in the Deadpool where they're talking about violence in movies, and they use this clip to portray that.
Ah, okay, that sounds right. It sounds like something old Clint would get up to.
Yeah, yeah.
He's over there crying macho, you know.
Exactly.
There's no way to know what that movie is about.
No.
Who could possibly guess what Cry Macho is about? Because no one's going to watch it. But like, what does it mean, Clint? What does it mean? What did that chair do to you? He shouldn't have painted that wagon.
Oh, we are going to go on some tangents this episode. Trust me.
Why did, I don't have to trust you. It's 35 minutes in and we haven't talked about the movie yet.
So, okay. So, yeah. And then there's a trail of blood that goes into the church. And then the guy says a fantastic line, which was,
"That's some baby. You guys ever see a baby like this? It took four bullets before it died."
That is some baby. Yeah, they shot the baby, crawled in the church, died. I have a feeling that the baby just didn't want to be born or something because it had free womb and board. Okay, so this is like the first.
At what point in telling that joke did you like, oh man, I really should abort this?
Oh.
But then it was too late and you had to deliver the punchline.
Yeah. All right, so good intro, right? Not a bad intro to the movie, not the podcast. This is the movie. It's a good intro. It's decent. It looks like you're like, oh shit, okay, this might be kind of a kick-ass little movie. And then you've got an hour and 31 minutes remaining, and we go to court. Like, it just starts right in court. Where we meet, where we see Garrett Graham making his third appearance on the Fine podcast. Big man on campus and Creature Wasn't Nice. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, the last time we saw him on this podcast, I thought he was looking at space porn, but I guess he was trying to do something with Quasimodo. I don't remember him in Big Man on Campus at all.
Yes.
Oh, he was a talk show host, yes, right?
He was the talk show host talking about baby monsters reading alien porn.
No, the alien space porn was actually later.
While listening to Grateful Dead. Yeah. Nope, that was one.
Isn't this just still the opening to a sequence in heavy metal?
I wish. That'd be kind of cool.
I'm thinking of the John Candy sequence.
Yeah. Did you recognize the judge in the courtroom? I wouldn't think you would. I didn't recognize
it. It was Judge Fudge, right?
It was Judge Watson, played by MacDonald Carey.
Oh yeah, Big Mac.
Who was in he took on a role in Days of Our Lives in 1965, and he played that role, Tom Horton, until he died in 1994. He started,
that's what you do,
3,026 episodes of that damn show.
I mean, if you get that gig, you're not leaving it.
No, apparently
it's
not.
It's a good gig.
Yeah, and he just kind of rolled with it.
And he good pay, steady pay. Don't have to worry about your job. No. SAG insurance.
He did find time to step away and film two episodes of Murder, She Wrote. So yeah.
Did any of those involve the murder of a baby?
One was just called Trial by Air, and the other was called Trouble in Eden. But I don't know what they entailed. But
no infanticide.
No, this is what we're doing in the courtroom. Is this is his everyday man, like you said, through the eyes of a middle-aged man.
So let's break this down. The movie's about demon monster babies. Cool, but not really. The movie's about this character, Jarvis Rooster Jarvis,
Stephen Jarvis. I don't know. I think they just call him a dick.
It's because he's an ass. Stephen Jarvis is the main character of the film. He's played by Michael Moriarty, who is a repeat leading man for Larry Cohen. I think Larry probably liked him a lot. I have never liked him, but that's a personal preference. Mm-hmm. He's the lead character in Q, the Winged Serpent, and also The Stuff. Here he is making a third collaboration with Larry as Stephen Jarvis. Stephen Jarvis is the father of this particular baby. They are having a courtroom to decide if they're going to murder all the mutant babies, and Stephen Jarvis is the defendant trying to get them not to murder the mutant babies. The rest of the film follows his breakdown, his depression, his death wish, manic episodes, and ultimately him trapping his ex-wife with a baby.
Yeah, I don't think he did the manic well enough. He just seemed really dull.
You don't.
Well, you know what? And I did pull the line that you wanted me to pull from The Stuff.
No one is as dumb as I appear to be.
Yeah, but he did a lot of
that's about his energy in this entire movie.
Yes, and he did a lot of TV movies. He was a big character on Law and Order, but he left Law and Order because of Janet Reno. She wanted to censor Law and Order and Murder, She Wrote, and he said, "Fuck that, I'm out." So you got to give him a little bit of credit.
Yeah, I'll give him that.
Okay, that's about all. So when you asked earlier about why he Larry Cohen liked this guy Michael Moriarty so much, his quote was, "I thought the character of Jarvis in Island of the Alive and Moriarty's performance was terrific. He had a controlled insanity about him, but that character is not without humanity and courage. The way Jarvis comes out and makes fun of himself and everybody else around him makes the entire situation seem insane." He had controlled insanity.
I would say he felt more like a ticking time bomb. He felt believable in that he is a type of person you will meet, a type of person that you will probably avoid when you find them. You know, anger issues is what you see more than controlled insanity. But he's got a death wish, definitely. And he's willing to risk anyone's life in the accomplishment of whatever he is currently hell-bent on. It is an interesting character. It's more interesting to hear the way Larry describes that character, though.
I mean, I get where he's going with that kind of controlled insanity, because he does kind of start to, but I never believe Michael Moriarty's performance as that.
No, it's okay. So imagine if Falling Down, but boring.
Pretty much.
And I'm not wrong. It's like, no. I said, I know I'm pushing it a line when I say it's a white male rage movie, but it is, and that's that character, but the acting is not accomplishing that either. So it's kind of just boring. He makes some wild choices, but the movie mostly follows him and his feelings and his quest. And what we see in the courtroom is this drama unfold where he's proving that the babies can feel emotion and are a sentient being, which is a weird thing for a movie to do.
Yeah.
And so that we shouldn't murder babies is the first lesson of It's Alive. And it's not wrong, right? You shouldn't murder babies, yeah. But it is a wild thing for the movie to go, but like, what if people are debating this, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're monster babies, right? They're demons. They're little gremlins with taut muscular bodies, not an ounce of fat on them, giant alien craniums, fangs the size of my fingers, and giant bug eyes. And they have claws, and they can bend iron bars and force jump like they've been accused of treason by the Jedi Council, and just leap across the room at high speeds and murder the shit out of everyone, which is cool. They're like cats, basically.
Yeah, they're like the most asshole cat you've ever seen.
And the thing is, they're unknowable and unreasonable, but they are still like a thing.
They
came out of people.
Yeah.
They're still a baby. They lack object permanence. I don't think that we needed to kill them. I think we just needed to put a sheet over us, and then they would look like we have disappeared.
It could work. But they're psychic, right? So they might not.
Did they ever choose peekaboo? Well, is that established in any of the other movies?
Sort of. It's established that there's a connection, but that's about it.
Because like they're scanning in the end of this movie, and you're like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? By the way, look at the special effects and their fucking like baby vision. What the fuck is up with the baby vision?
So,
like movies love doing this where they show through the eyes of the monster to unnerve you. And normally what they do is they give you like, sometimes they won't do anything. They'll make it look like the camera so you don't know what's going on. And then you like slowly key into it, and it's kind of cool. But sometimes they'll do like a special visual cue when you're looking through the eyes of the monster. So like in Halloween, you know, you see through mask eyes, and in Predator, you see heat vision, right? And this movie, everything's like, double vision. When I saw it, I was like, wait, was this movie supposed to be released in 3D?
If you cross your eyes and look through the TV, you'll see a spaceship.
I don't know if you're fucking with me or not.
And that was like those Magic Eye posters where you had to cross your eyes and like that. Yeah. The monster vision was established in the very first movie as the monster baby's point of view being of double vision, which would make sense as a baby.
I kind of get why, because it's cheap and easy to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reality behind it. But I think what they were going for in the first one was that, you know, a newborn baby probably doesn't see straight because its eyes are still all wonky and newborn, which is fine. But jumping a little bit ahead in this movie, when they're 5 years old and on an island, you'd think their eyes would kind of adjust.
Another important word from our sponsors. If you want to get into the exciting world of fine wine, but don't know a Merlot from Boone's Farm, we're here to help. At Better Than Nothing Wines, we've taken R&D from our other ventures and developed an exciting new subscription service. That's right, there's nothing wrong with dabbling in both mental health and alcohol. Simply send us a sample of your DNA collected by swabbing your mouth, and here's and urethra, really be thorough, get up in there, and mail it to us. Our crack team of scientists will develop a pairing menu based specifically on your DNA makeup and totally won't just sell your DNA to the highest bidder and then ship you a bottle we got on sale from Kmart. Does Kmart even sell alcohol? What are you, a cop? Better Than Nothing Wines. It's still better than nothing.
Back in the courtroom, because, you know, don't go to the island because you got to spend more time in the courtroom.
And So the movie spends a lot of time. Okay, let's set up this movie. This movie is an hour and 34 minutes. Mm-hmm. They don't get to the island of the baby before 45 minutes in. And by the 2 hour mark, by the 1 hour mark.
It just felt like 2 hours.
By the 1 hour mark, they're already off the, it did feel like 2 hours. By the 1 hour mark, they're already off the island. So there's no time on the actual island of the alive, an island of the alive. But yeah, so anyway, Jarvis wins the case by proving that the babies need to be, treated like humans and not murdered. So the judge comes up with this idea that they will move them all to Monster Island.
Yeah. Why not?
Okay. a couple things here. Firstly, and then also the judge says that the policy is going to stand as long as he's alive, which is not how policy works.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And he doesn't tell the parents like where their babies are. He doesn't tell them where the island is. Just says it's an island. And
It's Island Nubar. So the babies get shipped off. Then we follow Jarvis. We're there for the rest of the movie with Jarvis. Yeah. Jarvis goes all the way down to Florida to find his ex-wife who left after the baby incident and just been living and hiding and doesn't want to be associated with him or the baby in any way because, she doesn't want her life destroyed by this. She wants to move on. She can't live with him anymore. She can't live with the reality of what happened. She just wants to be left alone.
And you recognize this actress, right?
What was she
This is Karen Black. She was the acid tripping hooker in Easy Rider. She was in Airplane. She was the mother in Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses.
That's what I recognize.
She was in a Murder, She Wrote episode called One Good Bid Deserves Another. One Good Bid Deserves a Murder. And she was in Rollerblade 7. Did you ever see Rollerblade 7? I think I need to watch that.
I saw Rollerblade 6, but Rollerblade 7 is one of the movies made by the guy who did Death Comes to Frogtown and Roller Gator, right? Yeah.
That guy. Yeah.
I've seen Roller Gator.
Sword-wheeling, roller-skating people fighting ninjas. And she was also in Auntie Lee's Meat Pies.
Yeah, I don't like the sound of that last one.
You've never seen Auntie Lee's Meat Pies? Hold on, let me make some notes. All right, season 4, Okay, got that down.
I am going to make you watch so much French New Wave.
and don't forget, not only does he meet up his wife or whatever, he goes and meets a hooker.
Yeah, that's where I was getting to. It's like watching him go through steps. So she wants to be left alone, and so he decides to respect her wishes by finding out where she lives, going there unannounced, and harassing her to a place of work to try and get back together. And then when that doesn't work, he just mopes about the pier, and a hooker comes on to him, and he's like, you know what? That didn't work. Let's sleep with the hooker. And so he goes home with this prostitute, but then she finds out who he is and she freaks out. It's like, stay away from me. Something could be wrong with you. Why would you touch me? And then we see him going through like these phases of like, okay, depression at this point, listless depression.
Yeah. And this was supposed to be a kind of comparing it to the AIDS epidemic. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I got that. Yeah. I didn't like it, but I got it. The fly is a good AIDS metaphor. This is pushing.
Yeah. It felt kind of forced.
He goes back to New York. There's a party with his lawyer who brings over a whole bunch of publishers. And they're like, well, we're going to publish the story. And it's like, I don't want any part of it. It's like, well, we're going to publish it without you. You signed your rights. And he has a complete and utter breakdown at this party. He goes off the wall saying,
yeah, some lady asked for his autograph and he's...
He clearly should not have been invited. He was not ready for this. But all of his safety nets and institutions have left him. He's adrift and he's having a bad time. He's telling fucked up baby jokes and he's losing his goddamn mind. Yeah,
but he's not doing it like enough.
No, it's a normal person having a normal breakdown. If you're looking for a movie lunatic doing violent movie lunatic shit, it's not what's going on. What you are seeing is a grounded performance in that is the way a lot of normal people will hit that breaking point.
That's true.
By being completely inappropriate with people instead of being like Jeffrey Rush in Quills.
Yeah, you know, we can't. But that's not what I want to see in a movie about monster babies on an island.
No, I want to see monster babies on an island. God damn it. Well, first of all, movies, I think, have the right to, like, they could be bigger than life. Like, yeah. Grounded is good, but, like, they could be bigger and bolder and louder. No, this in a movie about monster babies, I want to see monster babies. Frankenhooker gave us Frankenhooker before the 1 hour mark. What are we doing here, guys?
And just as an aside, the lady that asks for his autograph was the wife of Bob Kane, the co-creator of Batman.
A person who also was screwed over in their creative endeavors, because that's what happens here, is they publish a story without him and he doesn't see a red penny.
And then he gets kicked out of it. Well, because then he does meet up with his buddy, Dr. Brewster, who tells him he's not welcome back at the hospital for whatever.
That's at the same party.
Yeah. Yeah. So he, and then that doctor comes back later. But this guy had a very interesting backstory. He was not in this movie very much, but I spent a lot of time looking him up because on Dr. Brewster. His name is Neil Israel. He is he did a lot of stuff. He got married to a lady named Amy Heckerling, who was the director of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Johnny Dangerously, Look Who's Talking, blah blah. Anyway, they got married in 1984. Had a daughter named Molly in 1985, and then got divorced in 1990. And then a few years later, it turned out that kid was not his. He took a DNA test, and it found out that it was Harold Ramis was the actual biological father.
Wow.
She had cheated on him with Mr. Ghostbuster. That was all just so I could play that busting clip. But that's the truth. And she finally met her actual biological dad when she was 19 years old.
She met
Harold Ramis. So that's a way, 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 way off to an aside. So go back to the book.
Well, that's what I'm going to.
Yeah,
I was building to before the aside. You're going to kill me tonight, Dustin.
Oh, I so am. I just figured there wasn't much to talk about with the movie itself, so I had to fill in with other shit.
I came to talk about the movie. And
well, if the movie was worth talking about, I wouldn't have to do this.
So the overall gist here is that you're watching this man spiral, and that's what the movie is about, instead of being about killer babies. Like, you're sitting there trying to watch a movie about killer babies, and instead you're watching him tell dead baby jokes at a party. That's what you're watching. But really, it's more Gein humor. It's more like, what did Ed Gein get his girlfriend for Valentine's Day? Lady fingers.
Yeah.
That's what we're going with. I don't think I've ever actually heard a real dead baby joke.
Oh, God. He used to tell a lot of them. They're all in horrible, horrible, horrible taste. But, of course, they would be. They're dead baby jokes. And one thing we did forget to mention, which was a brief little aside, was an actual trip to the island where they had a couple of unrelated guys.
I'm getting
okay,
there.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
But to finish the thought on fucking Michael Moriarty.
No.
Is he winds up.
No one is as dumb as I appear to be.
All right, go ahead. I'm going to sip a beer. You go ahead and talk about him.
No, we're good. We're good. We'll talk about the fucking island. So we get a...
No, not that island. God damn it. Go ahead.
We get 5 minutes of the island, if that, and that is the billionaire executives of the evil company that caused the mutation in the first place are secretly fly to the island to hunt the babies for sport so that they can kill them and destroy all evidence of the company's involvement in this in case future research proves that there's, you know, liability and money to be had, which is an insane thing, because if these people had that idea, they would hire people to go out and do it. They wouldn't, the executives do it themselves.
Yeah, but if you hire people, there's a chance that they might tell somebody. You got to take it in your own hands.
I no executive on planet Earth would do this.
Elon Musk
no
might.
No one. Elon Musk would hire his bodyguards to go take a piss. Really? Oh, okay. He's not flying to Murder Baby Island.
That's true.
Murder Baby here is an adjective, not a verb.
He would say he's going to fly to Murder Baby Island, but he would not actually go.
As an adjective, not a verb.
So yeah, that was just a brief little scene in the middle, and there's a couple of cool little murder.
They all get eaten, but the coolest thing in the entire movie happens here is as they're all getting eaten, the pilot just says fuck it and flies off. He's like, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a baby on board.
Yes.
There's a baby on board his helicopter, and it attacks him and murders him. And what happens is the helicopter inexplicably explodes.
Well, yeah, as it would.
That's the best part of the whole movie.
Yeah. Well, they should have known better to take on a group of baby soldiers, monster baby soldiers on an island. I think that was, yeah.
And then when you finally get some monster babies and exploding helicopters, then it cuts back to Michael Moriarty.
Do you know what you call a group of baby soldiers?
American troops.
An infantry.
We're here all night, folks.
Don't forget to tip your waitress. All right.
The next one you need to end with a waka waka.
I should get that soundbite on my thing.
Hi, it's Gimcrack here with an important announcement. If you or a loved one have been the victim of a data collection scheme posing as a mental health resource or a wine distributor, call the law offices of Shyster and Huckster now. Nothing can repair the damage of being taken advantage of by an app you trust, but money might help. Call Shyster and Huckster today. I have one more here. If you need help defending yourself from a government inquiry about selling your clients' data without their knowledge, or from federal prosecution from prescribing your patients a cure-all tonic made from cocaine and alcohol, call the law offices of Shyster and Huckster now. Shyster and Huckster, we're here to help.
We got back to him. He's at a shoe store because he hasn't seen a dime of money from the book, because they were going to publish the book anyway, and all he had to do is play ball, but he wouldn't play ball. So no ball, no playing ball, because he's got to do it his way. He's right. He's the white male protagonist. He is correct. And everyone else in the world is wrong. And he is angry that everyone else is wrong. And he is right, but he is losing in life.
Yeah.
And he going to make his anger everyone's problem in about 5 seconds, because what happens, one of the cops comes and finds him as he's hiding in obscurity selling shoes like Al Bundy, and he says, okay, we got to go on a mission to the island, we're getting the gang back together. Judge died, and because the judge died, the policy changed, and the new judge is like, well, we got to go to the island, find these babies and do some research. Okay, we need to bring you because you were able to handle the baby without getting murdered in the courtroom, so therefore you need to come to the island with us. And he does. And then he's like a pain in everyone's ass. He's shooting people with tranquilizer darts, and he's being obstinate. And he's, you know, coming on to the one woman on the crew.
The only woman.
He keeps sexually harassing her. Ugh. He comes on to her. He tells her how hot she looks. He says they should sleep together. He gets within an inch of her face all of the time. He puts his face within an inch of her face and just talks at her.
Yeah. It's very creepy.
And it's really reinforcing my read on this movie.
Yeah, unfortunately it is.
But this movie, this whole thing is nothing but filler, because they sail to the island and it's just images of them sailing for like 10 minutes.
And him like singing and sexually harassing and all kinds of fun.
But yes, there's a scene of everyone of the crew sitting on the deck and singing a song for way too long. Mm-hmm. And that comes back around because after everything goes to shit in his manic panic, like not to be confused with the hair dye or the foundation. In his manic panic, he sits there and starts singing that song again, little frantically.
Sea shanty kind of thing, yeah.
And it still goes on for too long in both instances.
Yeah.
They get to the island, they embark on the island, and thus begins the 15 minutes of the movie on the fucking island. And they're hunting the babies.
Yeah.
Because they want to tranquilize them and take tests.
Because they think they might survive like a nuclear fallout.
Yeah, and they want to weaponize that.
Yeah.
Again, very standard plot. But what happens here is this is interesting. It's not 1987, right? They're trying to find the babies. They don't know where they are. They're hunting in the jungle. Now, I had a thought here about this point in time. Tell me if it makes me a bad person. As opposed to all of the dead babies.
Yeah, I was going to say, I already think you're a bad person. But anyway, go ahead.
You're not wrong. Does this make me worse? Wouldn't they have tagged the babies when they dropped them off?
You'd think.
Yeah, why didn't you tag the babies?
And it's especially so because this is a point I forgot to mention about the part two movie was they actually put a tracker on one of the pregnant moms so they...
So the technology was there. So
they not only did they have the technology, but they've established the technology within this movie, and they did not.
We've entered into the misogynist framework, though, because you can track a woman, and it's okay to violate her rights and privacy and track her, but it's not okay to track the
baby. Not a monster baby. Don't abuse their mm-hmm. rights. Yeah. So I mean that's
okay. I will say the film is misogynist in a lot of its conceptions at this point, but it doesn't really feel as bad as it does at the end when it makes it real clear what its feelings on women are.
Just to take care of babies. That's all women are for. What do you mean?
They also sandwiched a rape scene in the middle of this movie for no goddamn reason. It is not that hard to film a movie without putting an assault scene in it. Why does this keep happening? Why is it impossible for these directors to keep making movies without sandwiching assault scenes in this movie? It pisses me the fuck off, dude. I'm like, where is this coming from?
It was so unnecessary, this movie, too. Just so unnecessary.
Yes.
I mean,
like, what? Like I say, I usually say it's unnecessary, and I contend that I am correct. But in this film, it was
wildly unnecessary because there was, I mean, like usually it's done in the movie to either advance the character of the rapist as an evil person or the person being assaulted as being an abused person or the hero that comes in to save them. It's usually done to.
I could go on a tangent for hours on assault as a character arc.
Right.
And oh boy, does that need to stop?
Right. It doesn't need to be done, but usually that's when it is done. And for this movie, it's not done for any of those reasons.
No, it's just done because fuck women. Am I right?
Right. Right.
That's what we're going with.
It's kind of done so the monsters could kind of look like they're good, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I skipped ahead of the death. Oh, there was a death of Dr. Brewster. Yeah, he died in he decided to take a bath on the island and he died.
Yeah. Yeah. So everyone gets murdered on the island except for, two people.
Someone actually almost died on that scene. Like one of the cast members.
Really?
Yeah, when he's in the lake and he's like splashing off all the water because he puked all over himself or whatever it was, whoever was in the monster costume was supposed to crouch underneath the water for 10 seconds and then pop up and then grab him and pull him down. So 10 seconds went by and they waited and they waited and the guy never came back up and they realized that his entire monster suit had filled with water. And he was physically unable to lift himself up above the water. So he almost died making this horrible movie.
Okay, so this expedition takes place 4 years after the events of the courtroom drama unfold, making the babies 5 years in total. The interesting thing is there's no time card that says that. You find that out through dialogue later.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying.
The babies are supposedly 5 years old, so you're thinking, well, monster toddlers. But no. No, see, because they're mutants, they don't grow at the same rate humans do. Mm-hmm. They're mutant humans or whatever. And so they actually grow much, much faster. And they're basically adults now. But they are played by actors who have just the giant alien head, because they just made a bigger version of the baby monster baby head.
Yeah.
And claws. And then the monsters kill humans and put on their clothes, so that the these guys, they're basically like 4 foot tall with giant baby alien heads, and they're wearing overalls.
Yeah, and the only thing I could find out about them is that they were played by, and I quote, little bodybuilders. That was the only information I was able to find out about them.
Anyway, they start murdering everyone. Starting with Dr. Brewster. The only people to get off the island are Jarvis and the cop.
Yeah, the cop.
But as they start murdering people, Jarvis at this point turns around and just very calmly goes, "Run! Run!"
Probably the best, the best acting he's doing in this movie, where he's...
But he's looking almost at the camera and completely deadpan in his face as he shots it.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. But performance choices in this movie are wild. But he's clearly on the baby side at this point. He's throwing guns away and kind of encouraging everyone to get shot. But he came to the island because he wanted to die anyway. He clearly wanted to die. So he came to the island. So he has a death wish. And he alternates between wanting to die and wanting the babies to kill everyone. Like, he wants to die, but he also wants the babies to, win. It's interesting. Those aren't separate goals.
Yeah, I think he just kind of wants everyone to be, because he was miserable. One of those things.
The all-consuming rage, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was going to rain. Oh, shit.
Was that rain?
That's thunder.
Holy crap. It sounded like, let's tell spooky stories.
The radar says it's not raining.
I've been out in Texas where it was completely sunny sky and it was pouring rain. I don't know what the fuck was going on in Texas. I heard that in the microphone. I was like, what the hell was that? So where are we at in this movie? Oh, everyone's dead except for him and the cop.
Yeah. Go back to the boat. Everyone on the boat is dead because the babies, they were able to get to the boat. So the cop swims back for the island and just decides to live marooned on the island.
Great cinematography on the boat, by the way. When they do the camera over as they're looking for everyone.
There's great production values in this whole movie.
And the captain's just laying there dead on the top. I'm like, that's good stuff.
So he freaks out and then is held captive by the mutant babies, pilot them to Florida.
Who they're telling him this telepathically.
Yeah.
And he hears a crying on board. And he's trying to figure out exactly what the crying is. And then he says,
"You reproduce in 5 years? That means I'm a grandfather."
5 years they had a baby. And he's a grandfather.
It's such a bad line for so many reasons.
They should have just had more time pass. I mean, you're making up the rules. Just do whatever you want.
Yeah. It would be less creepy.
Yeah.
It's very creepy, the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's Alive 3, Island of the Lives. Tagline is creepier than you'd think.
Yeah.
And you're buying a ticket to a movie about monster babies.
It's creepier than you think and not in the way you think. So yeah, he's on the boat. And the monster babies that are monster toddlers, monster kindergartners. I don't know what you
mean. Yeah, they eat all the people. Yeah. And then he's plotting a course to Florida. And a large portion of the movie is just that. The one he thinks is his son pushes him overboard to save his life. And he floats adrift until he winds up in Cuba.
Yeah. Why was any of that needed?
What a great question.
He shows up in Cuba.
I keep asking it.
And they rescue him and they take him to Fidel Castro. And then they just smuggle him back into Florida and then give him a gun. And I had to take out some of the lines here because he says how funny is this? A Cuban giving an American a gun. And he goes, a Russian gun. And then as he goes to leave, he says,
adios. Good luck with your kid. Maybe you won't have to
shoot him. Good luck with your kid. Maybe you won't have to shoot him.
See, I have a read on this. I don't think they were trying to help him.
No?
I think he was so goddamn annoying. They just wanted to get him the fuck out of Cuba.
That could be. They're like, look, he's going to die over there. Just let it happen. Yeah, I don't think they were happy with him. I think he's rather annoying.
Yeah, I think if more politicians had been aware of Michael Moriarty, he would have been kicked out of America.
Probably. Canada or France would probably accept him. I don't know why. But anyway. So yeah, the monsters are showing up back in Florida. Jarvis is showing up back in Florida. It's all coming together here in the third act. We go back to the bar where like the mom lady's is working. And there is this did you notice the real buff ass waitress that walks around?
No.
That like saw the monster going into the thing and she screamed. Anyway, she's got these huge guns. That's Jean-Claude Van Damme's wife.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just a little throw in there. She was Miss Olympia a couple of times, or in the top 10, whatever.
A lot happens in this final act, but what basically is, from a plot standpoint, what is trying to happen, the babies psychically know where the mom is, and they want to find her for a specific reason. And the reason is this. They're all dying.
Yeah.
They're all dying. They have measles, and they're dying. But they want to give the mom their baby that's alive to raise, which is also still a mutant monster baby, to be clear. So that's the idea.
Now, the mutant monster babies did just fine on the island by themselves for 5 years, 4 years, whatever it was.
Yeah, they got measles.
Why would they think that they need to bring the baby back to the place that sent them to there? It doesn't matter.
Because then Jarvis's white male rage agenda doesn't reach fruition if that doesn't happen.
You got a point.
Okay, let's hit up all the things in real quick order. The mom leaves early from the club. The babies want to find her, and so does Jarvis. So everyone's looking for her. But some local at the club who is a real scumbag has found out who she is and is blackmailing her to sleep with him. So she gets in his car because he's blackmailing her to sleep with him. And she drives off. Keep in mind, this is the plot.
Yeah.
Concurrent to this, in the down the same street, some punks just decide to try and assault a woman. And she is running for her life to try and not get raped. And she's beating them up, and she's running from across, all the way down the street, beating them up, down to the beach, jumping over staircases, doing crazy stunt work, and they're still chasing her. So that's happening. It cuts back to the mom with her situation, and the guy just starts beating her. He's screaming at her.
She pukes in the car, and then he just starts yelling at her.
So what is happening on screen is in this movie that's supposed to be about monster babies, but has been about one dude's depression for 40 minutes and had about 15 minutes of monster murder action, is now intercutting between scenes of a woman who was being sexually harassed, being physically and verbally abused, to a woman who is being literally sexually assaulted, back and forth.
Yeah.
In the same instance, out of fucking nowhere, because they do catch that woman and they do start assaulting her, and the monsters show up and kill all of them, and the woman's able to escape as they're killing him.
Yeah.
But like, she was assaulted. That was a scene that happened. And this is what it cut back and forth between.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's
kind of unnecessary. Just, I mean, there's a lot of
It's like, you know what? I haven't really gotten across in my movie yet. My attitude towards women, I think there's a way I can communicate that within the last 20 minutes of the film. What would it be? Hold on. I have an idea. Brainstorm.
We need women getting beat up, women getting harassed, women getting assaulted. We need all of it going on at the same time. Different locations.
I can only assume that was Larry's writing process. I could be wrong. I don't know the guy. And he has passed away, so we can't contact him to know for sure. I know, but I like the ambient thunderstorm that keeps getting more intense as we talk about this violent film. Like, as the movie gets worse, the storm rages on us.
That's
like the storm inside Michael Moriarty's tortured soul. Yeah, so anyway, the monsters find her. They give her the baby. Michael Moriarty finds her, and it's like, yeah, they're giving you the baby. They want you to raise the baby. And she's like, I thought you were monsters, but you're people. And Michael's like,
we do see a monster titty.
We do see that.
I don't know why it was needed at that point. Like, it's, you don't really need it, but okay.
Well, you know, she's 5 years old. Clearly they wanted to show it.
Oh, God, that's, I didn't even think about that, but that's weird.
Yeah, it is. And so, Larry, what was up with this movie, Larry? Larry, what were you doing here? But, it is to be clear, the implication is just that he just wasn't thinking about how weird his fucking story was. You know, he's like, we could have a life now. You could get back together. And then they do that. And the movie ends with him stealing a car and then telling a joke and then telling another joke and telling another joke. Like, the movie should have ended like 3 jokes back. And then then it finally does.
Yeah, but, and they just laugh and laugh.
Again, he's like, okay, so you didn't want to raise your child with me, but if I wait long enough, you're going to have to raise your child with me.
You're going to raise your monster grandbaby with me.
Yeah, but like, you get the point I'm making. This is the arc of the film. And I'm sitting there like, whoa. The written and directed by Larry Cohen came up immediately, and my wife just looks at him and says, fuck you, Larry Cohen. And I'm like, yeah. Like, the movie is basically, women are the worst. And yeah, right. And that's like, oh, wow. I was not expecting that. I will be honest with you. I expected this movie to be offensive in some ways, but not the ways that it was. I thought more killer baby action. And I didn't get that. And like, I feel
cheated. And you know what's funny is talking with you about this, it kind of makes me, you know, see things from kind of different perspectives. But looking back at parts one and parts two, there was never really any attempt by the mother to go above and beyond to save the child.
Yeah.
Much like this one, there was never an attempt by the mother to go. The mother just gave up. She's like, fuck it, I'm just going to go work at this shitty little punk bar in Florida. My life is done. Yeah. They're like, you know, this is all the dad has ever thought about his entire life. And the same thing with those first two movies is, you know, this is the dad on a mission to save his baby. It's interesting. I didn't put that whole thing into perspective until you mentioned that. I'm like, holy shit. Yeah. All three of those movies were that.
And there's a couple things going on there. I stand by that. I think misogyny is driving a lot of it, but also part of what's happening there is Larry Cohen is not capable or does not seem to have been interested in writing a protagonist that wasn't someone he personally could relate to. They're all men of some stature, usually roughly around the same age in similar circumstances. So at no point did he think about writing from a woman's perspective, which would have been a more interesting movie to see the mother give birth to a monster baby, because I think that movie exists. I think it's called Grace, 2008.
It definitely seems like something that would be more realistic, I think, because mm-hmm. there's this instant bond between mother and child from the second they're born. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't just be like, eh, whatever, I'm moving on. Like,
and there's another version of that you could do that's coming out soon. It's is already out. I'm not sure, but I think it's already out, but it's a possession movie. I think it's on Shudder. I can't remember the name, but the idea of this one is the child a demon? Or does she just have postpartum?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So this is, again, you could do that angle too. You could do, can the mother love the child in spite of its flaws? Or you can do grappling with maybe not feeling the way that you thought you should feel towards your child through no fault of your own. Both of those are interesting films. Neither are what we get. But there are angles you could go that aren't, yeah, I didn't make any money from my book deal about my mutant kid, so now it's everyone's fault. Run! Yeah. Run!
Swim! Swim! Run!
Bring these murder cannibals to Florida and infect everyone with measles as they get eaten.
Yeah.
That'll That'll show them.
People in Florida tend to vaccinate, right?
I feel like I hopefully haven't shit on this movie more than you expected me to.
Well, you know what? I think when I first saw this movie, saw the idea of this movie, I was like, part three movies, let's find something. I wanted to find something that was horror related, but not a hardcore horror movie, because I want to save some of those part threes for October. So I was like, okay, let's find some things just to do. And I was like, okay, this looks like it would be interesting. And it was something I wanted to see. I'm like, monster babies killing people on an island. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. And unfortunately, like you said, that's not the movie that we got, but I think it would have been good if we would have got that.
Yeah, I think that I would be down for that movie. That movie sounds fun. I would think if the movie we got on the 10, it would be great. After this movie, I watched Saltburn the next night. And Saltburn is another movie where you follow a male protagonist, a white male protagonist, who seems equally pathetic to Michael Moriarty's character, but more despicable in different ways. And the movie does some stuff I'm not going to talk about now because I don't want to ruin anyone watching it. You should watch it. It's fucking weird. And you'll feel weird and gross after watching it, which I think is an endorsement for a movie. What I can say is I watched that whole movie and I still like that character way more than Stephen Jarvis.
Yeah. Wow.
And with the entire perspective on what the character is when what he did, I like, you know, still better than Stephen Jarvis.
Wow, that is a ringing endorsement.
So that's what I got. What else you got for me for the making of?
That's Monster Baby Island. I don't really have. I think I kind of trickled in everything that we went into it about. Movie was filmed mostly in Hawaii.
Really.
Nothing much else. Well, those scenes in Hawaii. The one interesting thing was the party scene where he was found out about the book deal. That was filmed in Cohen's apartment, loft, or whatever. And he has actually filmed a scene in there for just about all of his movies.
Really?
Yeah. Just because that's what he wanted to do. But yeah, that's about it. I really sprinkled in everything kind of throughout this as far as the actors and actresses involved and the fun and intricate behind the scenes. There was not a heck of a lot to go on, but it was a part three, and I'm getting choked up talking about it. I'm over it now. So there you go. So Patrick, now that I have pretty much finished, I got nothing else to say about this.
In a way, I brought you here to offer you a job. You think you can do it better, so here's your chance.
All right. So, three things, and only three things, that you are willing to change. And listeners at home, you can play along with this game as well and guess and say your three things that you would change. But right now, we're listening to Patrick's three things. I guarantee I know what one of them is already, but I'm curious about the other two. So, what would you change about this movie to make it better?
So I might actually take this in a different direction than what you're thinking. The first thing we're going to do, the first change, is we're cutting off all of the movie up until the shoe store. We open at the shoe store. We get like a newspaper reference at the beginning to say, you know, to talk about the court case and maybe like show some book stands on the cover to like give you the brief cliff notes of what was going on with Stephen Jarvis and the Island of the Monsters. Do like a newsreel on the Island of the Monsters. Maybe have that be on the TV in the shoe store. But we get to the cop. He tells him, hey, we're going back to the island. Movie starts right there.
Okay.
40 minutes just chopped off the end. All right.
And you know what? You're doing that. You could make the kids, the monster babies, you could make them now 20 years old. It could be 20 years later.
It could be 20 years later. They could be perpetually giant babies. I don't give a shit what they look like. No, but you're right. No, you're right. You could make it 20 years later because you have no frame of reference for what Jarvis is supposed to look like.
Exactly.
Second thing. Now the expedition is twice the size it is, and the rest of the movies takes place on the island. We're just going to extend the whole movie to be on the island. We're never leaving the fucking island until the end of the film. It's the island of the alive people. We came here for murder action on Murder Island, and we're getting it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you.
And then the third thing, we end the movie with the baby sailing to Florida and a Jarvis hostage having to sail them there. Roll credits, because they're coming for us. No measles. They just wreak havoc on the island, and now they're coming back to the mainland, baby. That's how you make a fucking horror movie.
What? Well, does that mean no monster titty?
No monster titty. No, unfortunately not.
Damn it. I don't know if I agree with you now. I was with you all up until that point. But no. You know what? I think, and thinking about it, that actually would make a really good movie. But I think you would have to, the ending would have to be like maybe a handful of survivors on a boat heading back off of the island. Like maybe three or four survivors.
Wow.
Are on a boat. They're like, oh my God, we survived. This was madness. Oh my, we're out of here. And they're sailing back to Florida. And then you reveal that there's monsters on the boat too.
Either way.
So you got the happy ending and then the oh shit, here's a good idea for a sequel.
So the classic, the end dot question mark, question mark, question mark.
Right.
Stinger.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that would be good. But yeah, my guess was that you would say more time on the island if your movie's going to be about a fucking monster island.
That's it. It's supposed to be Island of the Alive. Let's do it. We're here. We're doing it. You can keep the helicopter exploding. That shit ruled.
It was completely unnecessary, but whatever.
Maybe they show up while those guys are sailing to try to get there before the expedition. That would make more sense to try and beat the expedition. And then they get murdered then. I think that'd work.
So you got anything else to add to this movie before I close it out here?
Yeah, we are the Found on Shelf podcast. You can find us wherever things are found on shelves. We are on all of the podcatchers of your choice. And you're also on the YouTubes and the TikToks. So if you'd like to join us online for any particular platform, we are there. And we cover movies like this every other week on New Video Tuesday.
Yeah. So, and stop by our website, foundonshelfpod.com. You can leave us a message, drop your thoughts on this episode, recommend your own threesome, threequel, threeniverse that you'd like to watch, that you'd like us to watch.
Find a women's rights charity and donate to them if you've watched this movie. You need to make amends in some capacity.
You know where they should have put all the monster babies?
Florida?
Into a day scare center.
Not too loud, you wake the kid up.
Music was all right.
Oh, wow.
That was an episode.
Yeah, that was... I really didn't expect that to be the movie that it was.
No, I was absolutely hoping for more monsters killing babies.
Yeah, that was like
monster babies killing people.
I thought this would be controversial because we were going to be talking about killing monster babies the whole time. Instead, it's like just some guy has the blues. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. I genuinely like the idea of following the everyman and seeing the madness through his point of view. I like the concept of that, but it's a very, very hard thing to pull off and be interesting.
Yeah, it really is. And I think you could do it if you made a couple of changes. One of them is it's got to not be Michael Moriarty. The guy's just punchable. You see him on screen, I want to punch him.
Yeah, what's that German phrase for a punchable face? Backfischenpunst or something? Yeah,
something like that.